Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. KSJE is supported by San Juan Regional Medical Center, here to meet your urgent and emergent medical needs, whether they are COVID-19 related or not. Medical emergencies happen when you least expect them. Whether it's a stroke, heart attack, illness, or injury, San Juan Regional Medical Center's caregivers are here to provide care to you and your loved ones. Find out more online at sanjuanregional.com.
It's 8:11. It is Wednesday morning, April the 7th. Good morning, everybody. I'm Scott Micklin, and thanks for tuning in to KSJE 90.9 FM over the air here in San Juan County, 103.3 FM over the air in Durango, Colorado, and streaming everywhere on the planet from our website, ksje.com. Welcome, everyone, and welcome to our viewers who are watching this visual radio program. The video is streaming live this morning to the KSJE Facebook page, our YouTube channel, and our Twitter account. We're glad that you are with us this morning. My guest, who is here in the studio with me for the very first time, superintendent from the Central Consolidated School District, Daniel Benavides, is here. We'll be talking about what's going on in the district as students have returned to the classroom and some of the plans for the remainder of the school year and also next fall, much, much more. That's all coming up in the next few moments right here on KSJE. And then later on this hour, we'll be checking in with Dr. Mike Hadabaugh from the Encouragement Lab. Always some great words of advice. And this week, Dr. Hadabaugh is talking about how many of our beliefs are extremely exaggerated. That's the topic today. You'll hear more about that at 8:50 a.m. this morning on KSJE. Next hour, Mick Hess will take us roving with the arts. It's our local classical music program, of course, and today it's a 90-minute version of Roving with the Arts. Mick is featuring music from Mahler and Barber on the program. You'll hear it all coming up today after the news at 9 a.m. on KSJE, and that'll take us to 10:30, our local and regional author program right on Four Corners. Tracy Hales-Vass is speaking with local author Terry Nichols about her latest book called The Dreaded Cliff. You'll hear more about that coming up today at 10:30 on Right on Four Corners here on KSJE. And don't forget, of course, in addition to Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, we invite you to connect with us on Instagram as well. Outside right now, sunshine in our studios at San Juan College. It is 39 degrees outdoors, and we are expecting a sunny day today with a high of 65 degrees. It's going to be windy again, though, with gusts up to 40 miles per hour are expected this afternoon. Clearing and 34 overnight tonight, mostly sunny, a bit warmer tomorrow with a high of 72 on Thursday, 68 with sunshine on Friday, 70 for the sun on Saturday, 73 on Sunday, back to mid-70s by Monday before things cool off just a bit for next week, and overnight lows in the mid to upper 30s. Well, let me turn to my guest, who is here with me this morning, as I mentioned, for his first time here in the studio. Daniel Benavides is here, the superintendent of schools for the Central Consolidated School District. Mr. Benavides, great to have you here.
Good morning, Scott. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for coming over.
Thank you.
We appreciate it very much. A big week for you and the Central School District. There's a number of reasons why I say that. One is you were welcoming your students back into school, at least more of them, right? As of this week, so just a couple of days in, but how's it going so far?
It's going well. We've had parent choice, and we started in person since March 22nd, and then PED has the full in person by April 5th. So we're a couple of days with more and more students coming every day. So it's pretty cool to see kids back in school.
Right. We were talking about that before we came on the air this morning, and just that seems like a simple act of getting kids back into the classroom, but just that motion and that activity really does kind of trigger other positive things, I think, for the learning process.
Right. It's pretty amazing. I think people have taken they're looking at education differently now, I think, and I think the pandemic has emphasized that we really do need teachers, and they've been taken for granted. And so I think that there's some relief there at home, that they don't have to juggle their job and try to teach their kids.
Right.
So,
or make sure the kids are on Zoom at 8 o'clock in the morning, or whatever the case may be. Right.
Or checking in and worrying about that kind of stuff. So it's helpful.
So. Right. And so far so good. And so the plan is for this to be continuing through the end of the year. But of course, anything can change.
That's correct. We emphasize parent choice. We want to make sure that those parents that want their kids to be able to have the opportunity to come in, they can. And if parents want their kids to stay at home because they still may be afraid, then they have that choice. But we have good conversations. We invite parents to come to our schools and look at those things to make sure everything's safe. But again, we understand that it's a choice. It's something that is very important to us at Central Consolidated.
Right. And I would assume if parents have some concerns or questions, the person to reach out to would be maybe the principal of their child's school?
Absolutely. That would be the best and easiest way to get a hold of what's going on in the school. A lot of people tend to go to the district and try to get answers, but we have 17 schools in our district. And the easiest way to make sure that they get the answers that they need is to go see their principal.
Right. Or contact.
Or teacher, yeah.
Or call them, or the teachers, or mm-hmm. or what have you. But it's up and running, so congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And the other reason I say this is a busy week for you is because you're in Santa Fe on Monday, you were telling me, for a major signing of legislation. The governor signed this legislation that returns impact aid to your district and a lot of others across the state, but that's been an issue, I guess, for the last several years.
It's been an issue. To answer your question, yeah, it's a big deal, and it's a little surreal because there's a lot of people in a lot of different areas that have helped out with this. It wasn't just one individual. It wasn't just one group. There's been a lot of people over the years that have been fighting for this, and it really, until three districts got together, Gallup McKinley, Zuni Public Schools, and Central Consolidated banded together and kind of formed a team and started pushing the issue really hard at the legislative level three sessions ago, and then using a lot of collaboration with the tribes and legislators and educating and doing research. It's a big deal. It's a big deal for all the districts that get impacted. And it's not only Native Americans that get that money back. It's districts that have military students that attend, the Alamogordos, the Clovises.
Right.
All those impacted districts get their money back.
So let me try to explain what we're talking
sure.
about, because this is for school districts. In New Mexico and a lot of other states, school districts are funded in a large part by property taxes. And so in places where there isn't private property, they don't get that property tax income, and so this idea of impact aid was developed. So far, so good.
Yeah, it's a little bit more.
It always is.
It always is, right?
Sorry.
Yeah, no worries.
Leave it to the media to try to simplify a very complicated topic. But
the easiest way to look at it is that we have an equalization guarantee,
right.
And what that does is it guarantees that everybody gets funded equally. And the way to do that is back in, I believe it's 1974, they figured out a way to, you know, to everybody to give their fair share. There's the half mill, there's Forest Reserve, there's impact aid monies, and so they take all this money along with what's allocated by the state, and they distribute it equally.
Okay.
Well, what happened was they took, at first it was 95% of that money was put in, only districts could keep only 5% of that money. The rest would go into the state and redistribute it to the rest of the districts.
That impact aid money.
Impact aid money, which is generated at the school where the kids go. So if they're military or Native American, they have to fill out this form
okay.
to make sure that they live there and they qualify. And then that gets turned into the feds. It's a long process.
Sure.
And they qualify for money. It is actually only 8 to 10 cents on the dollar, and it tries to replace that tax money that you talked about, property tax, that is not generated on federal lands. and the federal government gives that money back, so they can offset that money that's not generated that the state can't make. So
gotcha.
That's in it in a nutshell.
Understood. So I guess what was happening was the state was taking all of that impact aid money and saying, well, your district, even though you got a majority of this impact aid money, we're going to divide that up and give it and spread it among all the districts in New Mexico. And that was the rub and the problem.
Right.
That those three districts that you mentioned and others were saying, hey, we think we should be getting more of this money to our districts because our students are the ones that are triggering this funding.
Right.
And so, that's what the legislature finally dealt with.
Exactly. And so it was over the years, they've moved the needle to move it from 95 and then to 75. But our argument, a lot of the money that's generated by this impact aid money is from the students, and they were losing out on 75% of it. So the feds give us 100% of that money, but the state takes credit and they reduce the state money by that 75%.
Right.
In Central's case, for example, plus or minus, we were able to keep $5 million of that money, and the state was taking credit for $15
million. $15 million.
$15 million. And that money is needed. And if you've ever been out to Central Consolidated, Newcomb, Shiprock, Kirtland Central, you can see that we had to rely on very small property tax base to use that for maintenance on our schools or even to build.
Sure. Think about your district, which, as you mentioned, is huge, 17 schools.
Yep.
Again, most of Northwest San Juan County.
3,000 square miles.
There you go. You've probably driven most of it, or will.
Have. That's several right. times.
And so the private property portion of the Central District is a tiny little sliver in and around the Kirtland area.
Correct.
And that's it.
That's it.
Everything else is, and of course, they can't be expected to pay for maintenance and everything else for the rest of the very large Central Consolidated District.
And they have. They've that little bit of a property tax base has actually helped the district out over the years. And so this is a welcome change for us because we get to now kind of help everybody in the district, including Kirtland Central. So.
Right. And so you were telling me this is almost like winning the lottery because this is equates to how much money, additional money now for Central Schools.
So we will be getting plus or minus impact aid money. And again, it depends on the funding at the federal level, but plus or minus an additional $15 million. And then our half mil comes back to us, which is roughly $5 million. So we're looking at plus or minus $20 million per year moving forward and into the district.
And that's significant.
It's very significant because that allows us to build things that we haven't built before. It allows us to maintain our buildings. It allows us to have programs for our kids. The district has created a new department. Mm-hmm. It's called the Intercultural Community Outreach, which focuses on those specific issues, social, emotional, making sure our kids get those things, and it's brand new. So we'll be able to put some money into that and expand it and make sure that we're serving our kids that generate the money.
This department made possible because of this money?
No, the board actually took a look at if we were to get the money,
okay,
how would we be able to prove to the state and others that we're spending this money adequately and fairly. So prior to me coming to the district, the district created this new department. And
I see.
So it's about 11 months old.
This was the focus of the board then?
The focus of the board, absolutely.
But the money will help this.
It's going to be, it's hard for people to fathom, to be honest with you,
right,
this amount of money quickly.
Right.
And because they haven't seen it. It hasn't been done.
It's never been received before.
It's never been received before. So, yeah.
And so are there certain things you can use the money for and things you can't use the money for? Like can you hire more teachers with that money or is it more programs and buildings and maintenance and things like that?
The idea, the federal guidance is pretty loose. The legislation that was passed on Monday, or it's going to come into effect July 1st, has some restrictions, making sure that we consult with Navajo Nation and other tribal entities, stakeholders, and stuff like that. But the majority of it, in the conversations that we had with the board and some conversations with the community, this isn't a done deal as far as what we're going to use it for. But some of the ideas out there is to make sure that we have facilities that are up to date. You know, making sure that those classrooms and have the technology and the Wi-Fi and those type of things. And quite frankly, if you've been out to those areas, our buildings are in bad shape. We need teacher housing. We need a lot of things that take capital money. and there's going to be a big infusion for that. So,
right. It's the uniqueness of the Central District that you have some unique challenges and issues that other districts in the state don't have to deal with.
Correct.
You mentioned teacher housing, and
Correct.
There's not very many. There are other districts that do that too, but when we think about it, we don't always think about providing housing for your teachers, and you do.
Right. I mean, you've got to be able to have a working staff to educate our kids in Newcomb area.
Right.
We've got to have
without an hour commute.
Right.
Or longer.
And we got to provide facilities for them to be attractive for them to come out. I mean, we're relying on people to stay in that community, but if we don't have industry to support them, it's hard. So we got to look at teacher housing. We got to look at those type of things to attract teachers.
Right. So and your staff. So that makes
and staff,
a, makes
correct.
A lot of sense for sure. And we were talking about technology and infrastructure and things like that earlier. And so again, I know the school district's been at the forefront of trying to get your schools wired for the internet at the very beginning of the internet age, and
right.
then you know upping the capacity as things go more and more online. It's hard to do an online test if you can't have all your kids online at the same time. And so these are some of the things that you deal with.
Yeah, in the last couple of weeks, we've noticed I've gone to the different school sites and I've tested the bandwidth myself just so we could see where it's at. We're increasing that bandwidth, and it's improving, but it's still not where it needs to be for our kids. Our kids rely on that. It's just something that should have been done previously. And I'm not talking administratively. I'm talking about the state of New Mexico in general. We should be looking at all our rural areas. And from my understanding, the legislature tried to do a really good job of increasing that need by putting some money into that infrastructure. So that's a good thing.
Right. Well, in our state, we know we've got areas that are well connected to the internet and areas that are not so well connected.
Right.
And when it comes to schools, you really need to have everyone on the same playing field.
Absolutely. That's a very good way of looking at it.
So they're very good. And so I want to ask you a bit more about
sure.
Some of the other plans that are coming up. And this is with graduation coming up. We were talking a little before we came on the air this morning, and I know everything's dependent on what color on the map San Juan County is, whether we're still
crossed.
Turquoise and we want to stay there because that's the least restrictive. And of course, that's the idea. But your principals from your high schools are planning some graduations for your seniors. I know parents are concerned that they want their senior to be able to walk across the stage. It's just not the same to see their picture on a video screen with the announcement that they graduated.
That's absolutely correct. The principals are working on those plans right now. Plan A, Plan B, in case we do fluctuate or we happen to be in that color zone for graduation. But the plan is to stay in turquoise. So everybody out there in the county, please try to do what we can to stay turquoise. So all our area schools, Farmington, Gallup, Astec, Bloomfield, and especially Central Consolidated, help us with the turquoise, because the plan is to do is to have in person. And under turquoise, we could have 75%. And so that's what we're shooting for. So that's our plan.
Okay. That would be great. And for a lot of parents and families watching and listening to us this morning, I'm sure they're thrilled to hear that that is your hope.
Fingers crossed. And we're looking at multiple things just to give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
If it's 75% capacity, we may have one location that serves the most, so we can have more parents and family members.
The size of the facility
makes a big difference.
Right.
And but again, that all could change depending on the county color and what's going on. So we hope to stay turquoise.
Right. So. And the idea, I guess, would be too, is you have this in-person graduation for your seniors,
keeping all the social distancing, everything,
exactly.
But the idea is to have kids and come in person and be able to walk through and having a few family members, because last year the whole state, the whole nation had to, like you said, they had to be creative, and even some cases didn't even get to have one because it was so restrictive. So
right,
yeah.
And I guess the only thing you're thinking about maybe that could change for this year would be maybe how many family members could
correct.
Attend, because that would depend on the size of the venue,
correct,
and the level of openness of the particular
correct.
County.
And that's going to be hard, because I know parents and family members want to be there and celebrate and that kind of thing. So we have to take that in consideration. I know people are going to be bugged about that, but we got to be mindful of what's going on out there. And that's the pandemic. And hopefully it continues the downward trend.
Right. We all hope that happens. And if we can keep doing what we're what we've been doing and continue to do, and the social distancing and the mask wearing and the vaccinations get rolled out. I mean, the Navajo Nation has done a great job,
as the state
of New Mexico. And so that, I think, is helping with some of these numbers that we're seeing.
So
that's important. Next fall, let me ask you a little bit about
next
fall. And so you mentioned student choice a lot and family choice about coming back to class. If face-to-face learning is allowed in the fall and the numbers are still as low as we hope that they are, would some parents still be able to say, you know, I just don't feel comfortable sending my child back to the classroom? Could we keep it virtual for a while?
That's the plan right now, Scott. We're looking at, again, we really emphasize parent choice because we feel that the parents are the best judge of what they need to do for their kids. And so if we're allowed to go back in the fall, we're going to look at parent choice again. And so unless something changes at PD's level, at the state level, that's the plan.
Got it. And so parents would have that choice to make. And then I guess the other thing, too, is, though, for planning purposes, right, it'd be nice if they could choose and then not change their mind halfway through. But they do, and that's understandable. And is that something that you've dealt with even this year, I imagine?
We do. We have those. We have people that are apprehensive about coming back. And then they check with their family members or their family friends, and they ask how it's going. And we encourage parents, if they want to come see what's going on, to come to our sites and do a tour, you know, show them how safe we are, what we're doing to clean the school sites. And so it is, but you know what? We have to accommodate parents. That's the thing that we have to understand as a district. Before the pandemic, schools are really good at opening their sites. They're really good at getting kids to be in person, do those type of things. Well, I think we need to change our mindset that sometimes parents may be jumping in and out, and we have to accommodate them. And if we want parents to feel comfortable in a school site or in the district, we need to accommodate them as best we can.
Gotcha. So that'll continue.
That'll continue.
That flexibility.
Absolutely.
That's really important. My guest this morning, Daniel Benavides, is here. He is the superintendent of schools with the Central Consolidated School District. And Mr. Benavides, I want to ask you a little bit about, because with your years in education, you know, this has been a rough year. I think there's no doubt about it, for your teachers, for your students, for your families, just with the unknown and the shifting back and forth. As we hopefully move out of COVID and maybe get back into a more stable planning procedure for mm-hmm. schools and things like that. I know when you watched how your students are doing in the schools, are you concerned about their learning and some of the maybe things that COVID has brought to our attention that maybe, you know, it's hard for kids to stay focused when they don't know if they're going to be in school or out of school or what have you, I guess is my question. It's a long and rambling question.
No worries. I do worry about the social emotional piece. Everybody talks about that, but unless you've been in the classroom and unless you've seen kids on a day-to-day basis, parents see it, teachers, and people can talk about it, but we see kids. When I go to the playgrounds for the kids that are back in school, there's a huge difference in the way they're interacting. They're apprehensive, but then they're around their friends and you can see them open up, and I am worried about that. And we're trying to accommodate that. We're in the process of solidifying some of those plans to address those. We're looking at hiring more, and it's going to be tough because everybody's going to be looking at that. We're looking at hiring more social workers and some more counselors and just people in those expertise to come into our sites to make sure that we help our kids. Very worried about it. I mentioned before when I had talked a while back that at that time we were coming up on a year with some of the kids that haven't been in or seen their teachers in a year.
In person.
Right. They've seen them on Zoom, but some of the kids haven't even seen their new teachers. So they, if they were going from third grade, they may have known their teacher in person, but then they go to the fourth grade and they've only seen them online.
Right.
And that's challenging because as adults, I know I get tired of seeing people on Zoom. We have to do it, but that's why I'm here today, because we have that opportunity to be face-to-face.
Right.
And we still practice the social protocols.
You're way over there.
Hey, that's okay, right.
That's right.
But those kids need that interaction. There's just so much data that shows that interaction with their peers and their teachers is extremely important.
Sure. But I guess from hearing you describe what you see on the playground, does it also say that many kids are resilient and they bounce back fairly quickly?
In my humble opinion, and for what it's worth, I think adults don't give kids enough credit for being resilient. Kids are resilient. They deal with a lot of different things. Their home life, they deal with their social lives, they deal with this complication of social media. Kids are resilient, and we don't give enough credit to them, and they do such a phenomenal job. I'm not saying that they handle it well, but they're resilient. They work through it, and you can't ask for anything more out of them. They're pretty phenomenal young people.
Right. Good to hear you say that. Well, and I agree with you. I think they can still have troubles.
Right.
And still need help from time to time, and that's for, and we shouldn't ignore any of that.
We can't.
But that they are maybe a little bit stronger and tougher than we give them credit for.
Exactly.
Many times.
Exactly. I think that adults tend to baby them in some ways, and that's a natural instinct. But you talk to kids and you ask them, "How do you like being back?" "I love being back." "How's the food?" "Love the food." "I wish they were."
Really?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of my things is I like to go, and I'm able to now. I told the kids, "You're going to see me more. You probably don't know me and probably don't care who I am, but I care about you, and I know our staff cares about you. What the food's like? How are you doing?" You know, and for an adult to ask a kid their opinion, they look at you kind of suspicious, but then they can tell if an adult's genuine,
right,
and they'll answer you. And that's the part that I love.
Sure. So. Any surprising answers so far when you ask that question?
They're tired of being around mom and dad.
Well, all right.
What do you expect?
You. Yeah, after a year, yeah. I get it. So that makes a lot of sense. Well, Mr. Benavides, it's a pleasure to have you here in person. We've only met through Zoom since you got to the district.
Right.
And so this is our first chance of meeting in person. It's great to have you here. Best of luck, of course, as the school year wraps up. And we'll look forward to having you back here more times in the future.
And thank you for having me. And thanks for having me in person. And look forward to having more of these conversations.
I look forward to it as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Daniel Benavides, my guest this morning, the superintendent with the Central Consolidated School District, here with me on KSJE. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.